whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Boy.
All right. 1 hour down, 2 more to go. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the fan. We got Ray on the other side. That was Marco Belletti telling you the Jets. I mean, the never-ending. I told you yesterday, I want Pete Carroll. I think that's a name that they haven't talked to yet, believe it or not. I'm surprised. They've talked to everybody. And I just think Pete Carroll is the kind of coach I'm looking for, which is, to me, I want to bring back Aaron Rodgers. Not to the Giants, but to the Jets. I want to keep Aaron Rodgers. I want to keep Devontae Adams. I want to keep that relationship. I want to add and figure out a way to combine it with Garrett Wilson and get everybody happy. And I do think there's a world where that could exist. And I want a culture bringer. That's what I want, someone who's going to come in here with a winning history. And Pete Carroll fits that bill. I mean, not only has he won a Super Bowl, but I mean, they were as stable as you can get for 13 years. I mean, the Seahawks were as stable, a winning contender as you could get for 10 to 13 years. He did it different ways. It was led by its defense early on. Then Russell Wilson took over, even one with Geno Smith. So Pete Carroll comes in. He's not the coach of the future. He's going to retire in a few years, although he's 73 and he's about as spry a 73-year-old as I've ever seen. But I just think he would be here for a couple of years, set the organization the right foot, get another, you know, hopefully, I think absolutely could win with Aaron Rodgers in this defense, get a legitimate defensive coordinator in here, get a good offensive coordinator in here, and just get away from the stories about the owner, the losing, you know, maybe, you know, make the playoffs. They need a palate cleanser. And I got to tell you, because all of the names don't really do it for me. Like the names that you're going through right now, the options, yeah, if Vrabel were an option, Vrabel, 100%. That would be my guy. I think he is an absolute excellent head coach. And I think he would be the kind of guy who'd be here for 10 years. That's everything you would want. He brings winning credibility. I know they didn't win-win, but I mean, what he was able to do in Tennessee with Tannehill and with that disaster of what's going on with that franchise. I mean, now they're firing another GM. They got the first overall pick. Like, they've just been a brutal organization since he left, and they were able to do that. I mean, they at the end of his tenure and then this year, just brutal. And what was he? He was a one seed in the AFC when Tom Brady was still with the Patriots. He beat Tom Brady and the Patriots with Ryan Tannehill. I think he is a legitimate great head coach. That would be my number one choice. I don't, obviously, with now the Raiders and the Patriots being available, I'd be shocked if the Jets were a legitimate landing spot for him. It feels like he did what he had to do. He interviewed with the Jets and he got the Patriots and Robert Kraft to fire Mayo. But other than that, I'm looking for a stabilizing force. It doesn't have to be Pete Carroll, but I think he's as good an option. Someone who would take the job, a couple of years removed from all the stories and the nonsense, get some winning in here, and, you know, someone who's, you know, won a Super Bowl, won national championships, can actually just have clock management, maybe clean up the penalties, just have a well-coached team. You bring back Aaron Rodgers, because again, find me another quarterback who's going to win for you next year and going to give you better numbers than 28-11 and 3,900 yards. So that's what I'm looking for. I don't need the next coach who's going to be here for 20 years. I don't need Flores. I want to go offensive mind if I can, if I'm going to go that young route. Like, none of the names. Nagy is a name that they finished their interview today. He's not a terrible choice. If you look at some of the, you know, he was able to win. I mean, it's not a name that jumps out at you. Obviously, his history and the way it ended with Chicago, but I mean, he had some terrible quarterback play and found ways to, you know, win some games, make the playoffs with some awful quarterbacks. And obviously now under, you know, working with Andy Reid, you could do worse than Nagy. But the one name that, I mean, Steve Spagnuolo, we talked about Steve Spagnuolo the other day. I think it was me and Keith one of the days, New Year's Eve, whichever day it was. he might go down. In fact, I think he probably is the greatest defensive coordinator in the history of football. Like, if Bill Belichick did it for as long as Steve Spagnuolo, maybe it would be Bill Belichick, but he ended up becoming the greatest head coach in the history of baseball, history of football. But Steve Spagnuolo is probably going to go down. I mean, he won a Super Bowl with the Giants. He's won three with Kansas City. Could be four by the time he takes a job anywhere else. He is not a head coach. He's just not. And I would really hate to see Steve Spagnuolo take the Jets head coaching job, because it won't work for him. And it'll just reinforce that he's not a head coach. Stay a defensive coordinator. Stay with Andy Reid. Stay with Patrick Mahomes. Win as many Super Bowls as you can. And be, I believe we checked, there's no coordinators in the Hall of Fame. Be the first defensive coordinator to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And let that be your legacy. Do not take this Jets job. Not that I think they would offer him. And it's just getting weird with the whole thing. I gotta be totally honest with you. It's starting to feel like it's going to be Rex. Like, that's what I'm starting. We don't know. They're interviewing a ton of people. It feels like that the owner, who absolutely adores Rex Ryan, Rex is talking so confident. For even Rex, it seems reckless to talk as confident as Rex is. And they're just throwing such a wide net. Like, what did you need to hire an outside group? Why did you need to hire Tannenbaum to literally just say, okay, let's interview everybody? Don't you want to target it? Don't you want to look for specific people? I understand you want to talk to as many people as you can, learn as much as you can. I'm not knocking them necessarily, but it just feels like, you know, when it's this wide a net, it feels like you're not targeting anyone specific or looking for anything specific. Like, I don't know. If you're going to hire an outside firm, wouldn't you think they'd have like a couple of candidates in mind, maybe? Not just like anyone who's talking to anyone this year. It just feels like they're going to end up hiring a coach before a GM, which is a disaster. It feels like this is all just going to end up being Rex Ryan. And it might appease many of the fans. It's crazy, but I would look for someone to stabilize this franchise, bring in a winning culture, bring it back with Aaron Rodgers. 888-808-1019. Let's go to the calls. Let's try Eric and Ron Konkama again. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, hey, C-Mac. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
New route here has some dead areas here.
I got you. No problem.
Okay. Look, I'll preface it right from the beginning and say I've always wanted Pete back. I love Pete. You know, I want him back. But I'm trying to look at this as objectively on both sides as much as I can without being too much of a fan here. Right?
Okay.
And I understand, you know, look, the one trap that we all fall into, okay, you guys with the Yankees, us with the Mets, now that Cohen's the owner, is you just believe that because of the amount of money that the team, and I hear it when people call about the Yankees, they're worth however many billions of dollars as a franchise and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these guys didn't get that money by being idiots, okay?
Right.
So when you have somebody like now, they
well under the case of under the case of some of them, they got their money because they were born into the right family. To be totally honest with you,
I agree.
I mean, Woody Johnson born into the right family, James Dolan born into the right family, Hal Steinbrenner born into the right family.
I do get that.
John Mara,
but someone like Cohen who made his money, even George Steinbrenner made his money.
Yep.
You know, they didn't get there by being idiots. Okay.
Nope.
And however they spend it, sometimes it may look that way. But they did offer Alonzo 7 years, 158. I might be off on the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he turned it down.
Yes,
that's on Alonzo. Mm-hmm. Okay,
of
that
course.
Doesn't mean now. And yes, they spent a ton of money. I could use other language, which I can't on the radio. But they spent that money on Soto,
mm-hmm.
which again, I'm thrilled they got him.
Okay? Absolutely.
But the guy also had to pay however many millions to get rid of Scherzer and Verlander and pay off Cano.
Yep.
You know, these guys don't enjoy having to just throw money out there to get rid of something. Okay? So there's blame on both sides here. The argument I've heard people call up and say, well, they're not treating him like a part of the family. They offered him a contract. He turned it down. And, in fact, even then went to Boris after that to take on his services as an agent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I don't think the family value argument works for
why? Because they offered him one. Because they offered him one contract. He would sign that contract again. We all agree that contract might be out the window. But something.
But look at what's going on now, though. They offered them the contract, which
everyone kills the New York Giants for the Saquon Barkley situation. I don't hear many people going, "Well, they offered Saquon a contract." They offered Saquon the same relatively the same contract that Philadelphia gave him. Close.
No, I understand that, but the biggest reason why people are freaking out about that is because Mara made the comments about him not sleeping if he went to Philly. Mm-hmm. If any other team offered him that contract and he went there, they wouldn't care.
If he was rushing for 2,000 yards, I think they would. If Pete Alonso hits 50 home runs next year, you'd be surprised how many people are going to go, "Oh man, you know." And they're playing who at first base exactly?
Well, look, and that's all fair. I agree. This is why I want Alonso here. I want to see him paired up with Soto. I think he'll do fantastic. But what I'm saying is, when it comes to the money part of it, I blame on both sides. I mean, because I can see,
of course. But that's my point.
Annoyed that he didn't take the first contract.
My point is, right now it feels like there's no pressure on the Mets to have him be the next David Wright. It feels like all the pressure from the fans, and it's like,
he shouldn't have to be David Wright. He should be his own player.
What I mean to be is like, "Hey, Pete, don't you understand it's best for you to be in?" It's also best for the Mets to have someone like Pete Alonso play his entire career for for the Mets. There's value on both sides. That's all. I'm saying the same thing. There's blame on both sides. There's value on both sides. But it sounds like everyone's just saying, "Hey, Pete, play ball."
No, it's and I'm not directing this towards you because I know you're not saying that. I'm just saying there's a lot of people out there, you know, with certain arguments that just do not make sense. And I agree with everything you're saying. It's on both sides. I think there is something to say about, I don't know if you want to say legacy with Pete, but you know, there's certainly something to be said about, you know, the mark he can make on staying on the team.
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, I mean, if he decides to go elsewhere, am I going to be annoyed? Absolutely, because I think he could have been in a much better place right from the beginning, you know, of this whole negotiation. But at the same time, I if he wants every little dollar and someone else finally gives it to him and the Mets don't budge after all these negotiations, you know, I'll be angry at both sides. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying, if we're going to say, like, and I'm getting this just from the David Wright stuff, but not just, because it's been part of the conversation, but like the thought process from David Wright, I think, speaks to the duality of the situation. Like, David Wright spoke to the media. He's going to have his number retired. He's asked about the Pete Alonso situation, and he goes into, "I hope Pete understands the value of playing in one uniform and being a Met for his entire career." He referenced Chipper Jones. He references Derek Jeter. He also says, to be fair, he also says, "Hey, but I never would begrudge a player, you know, getting what he deems his value to be." So it's and then he goes on to say, "Well, the great thing about the Mets right now is their desire to win at all costs." Well, not at all costs, because they don't feel like the cost of Pete Alonso. You can't tell me they're not better this year with Pete Alonso. And I think the fans want it. And this is an owner who's made his bones giving the fans what they want. And I do think, you know, just because Pete Alonso turned down a contract, you're right, he turned down a contract. He bet on himself and he lost. I get that. That's all part of it. If he would have hit 50 home runs this year, maybe they would have to give him more money. Maybe, if they want to keep him. But he bet on himself and lost. So that contract's gone. That's all that means. Like, I don't take from it, like, that, "Oh, well, the Mets did what they..." You can't say the Mets have been unfair to Pete. They offered him a contract. Because that's, like, the same thing could have happened with Judge, right? Right now, like, it's just a matter of how Alonso played, right? Because I got a ton of, you know, Yankee fans mad at the way Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees handled the contract negotiations before the season with Judge. "Oh, you lowballed him. You gave him a $230 million offer. It's embarrassing. You're lowballing him, blah, blah, blah." You only say that now because he went out and had one of the great offensive seasons we've ever seen. Judge didn't have 2 years back-to-back with staying healthy his entire career prior to that. And if the next season where he runs into the wall in Dodger Stadium and hurts his toe, if that season would have happened instead of the 62 home run season, everybody would be saying, "Oh, thank God they didn't give him $300 million or $400 million. Oh, hey, hey, Judge, play ball. You know, they offered you a contract. You turned it down. That's the only difference is Judge played well. Alonso didn't. But the only thing that the contract during the last offseason gives, it doesn't mean that they no longer benefit from Pete Alonso or shouldn't show some sort of understanding that there's value to them bringing back Alonso as well as Alonso coming back. Like, that doesn't go out the window. All it means is that contract goes out the window. I offered you a contract. You're right. It was 7 years, $156 million, whatever it was. That contract went out the window. You're not getting that contract. So I agree. But does it mean that they have to be dormant? It means they have to give him 3 for 90 and put it there and say, that's it, take it or leave it, which it feels like right now. It feels like there's no negotiating. It feels like they're not working with him. There's no ongoing talks. There's nothing new. Right? Andy Martino, nothing new with the Mets and Pete Alonso. Nothing new. He wants $6 million. He wants 6 years. Just because they offer him a contract, all that means is that contract went out the window. Not that their relationship should go out the window, or that, hey, they did everything they could to bring back Pete. They offered him a contract before the season started, so I don't want to hear any complaints about how they handled Pete. That's not how it works. And I'm sure that's how Pete feels. Like, okay, wait. So you offered me, at the start of last year, you offered me 7 for 156, or whatever it was. You're telling me that because I hit 34 home runs this year, hit the biggest home run of the entire playoff run, played well in the postseason, that I'm half as valuable? We want to say, oh, it's unfair to say the family stuff. Is that how family should be treated? So wait, I had a slightly down year, which still included hitting 34 home runs. And then in the playoffs, with our back against the wall, two outs away from getting beat by Milwaukee in the wild card, I hit the biggest home run off of what MLB just called right now the best relief pitcher in Major League Baseball, by the way, the New York Yankee closer, Devin Williams. But so you're telling this, like, you think Pete Alonso feels like he's being treated fair by the Mets because he was offered a contract in the offseason that he turned down? Because after a year where he's down slightly, where he still hits 34 home runs, he's still an all-star in his mind and in reality, but we all know he probably shouldn't have been. But anyway, my point is, he views it as, hey, I had such a down year. I hit 34 home runs, I'm in the all-star game, and I hit the biggest home run off of arguably the best reliever in baseball to save our bacon and help us get to an NLCS. And I hit home runs for more than that along the way in the postseason. So I had a good postseason, including the best and biggest home run we hit. I hit 34 home runs, and I was an all-star, and now you're telling me I'm worth half as much. I get I'm not going to get the same contract, but half? Okay. If you want to say, because they offered him the contract in the offseason, that they did everything they did right by him, and whatever happens next is just what happens next. I don't know if I agree, because I could understand Pete's problem. Wait a minute. I've been the guy, right? While as great as Lindor is as a player, and you could argue he's better than Pete, certainly last year without question, but you could argue he's been the better player for the Mets, I suppose, over his time with the Mets. I don't know. You know, I think you're making an argument it was Pete for years, but the fan base was always unsure about Lindor. They weren't unsure about Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso was their guy. Pete Alonso had 50 home runs his rookie season. Pete Alonso was the face of the franchise. Pete Alonso was ripping shirts off and celebrating. Pete Alonso is LFGM. Pete Alonso is the polar bear. He had a down year that included 34 home runs, the biggest home run of their season, and a good postseason performer, and he's worth half what they offered him. Close to half, years-wise, I think, at least half, yeah. I can understand why Pete's not all that thrilled with it. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
We'll talk about the Mets. I wanted to talk about Woody Johnson and how hiring a coach before GM?
Well, they haven't just yet. They're interviewing. It's not like typically you would hire GMs and expedite that hire and then make that hire and then include him in the coaching. And they're kind of just doing it all at once. So,
have they done anything right in the last, say,
no.
23 years, 25 years?
Well, I mean, in the last 23, 25, they did go to two AFC championship games. So, yes, they...
Was that with Woody?
Yes.
Or was that with Leon Hess?
No, that was with Woody.
Woody, okay.
Mm-hmm. It was 14 years ago. It was with Woody.
Woody took over, what, 2000?
Right around that time, certainly before 2010, yeah.
Right. Okay, but since then, nothing's gone right with them.
No, and correct. Woody Johnson's an absolute disaster, of course. No one's doubting it.
I agree with you. They should bring back Rodgers next year.
I agree.
Maybe the year after, another quarterback sit behind him and learn from him.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, he's not going back to England, and he's going to be in the way forever because doesn't know how to.
He's the owner. I mean, so we could talk about him getting out of the way. It's just it's not a real. He's not someone who can be fired or released or cut.
Yeah,
like he's the owner.
James Dolan got it. And we never thought. I would never thought James Dolan just would get out of the way of Leon Rose and the Knicks. And
he got out of the way of Phil Jackson as well, and that didn't work out.
No,
so,
but then
I
finally hired someone.
He also, for years, got out of the way of...
Isaiah Thomas.
No. Well, he loved Isaiah Thomas. He showed extreme loyalty to him. But no, Glenn Sather of the Rangers. He allowed Glenn Sather to run the Rangers the way he wanted to for years. Like, but that didn't make him a good owner.
No.
So, I mean, it's...
What I did like was when he walked into the room and Tortorella was the coach and Tortorella told him to get the bleep out. And get the bleep out of my locker room.
Yeah.
And you're not going to tell me how to run this team. And he walked out the room.
The point is not James Dolan. The point is Woody Johnson. That's part of why... That's why I want a coach... and a regime that's going to get a palate cleanser from all this nonsense to make us forget the story about how he's, nixing trades because of Madden ratings and, letting his sons run the franchise and, telling the quarterback he sucks while he's in the shower. Like, all that stuff that came out in these last couple of stories that have hit The Athletic, the Jets need to remove themselves from the streak of losing.
They're never going to get out of that misery.
Right, and that's why I want Aaron Rodgers, because I don't see a cleaner path to that. I don't want to rebuild when I have Aaron Rodgers. I have a talented roster that I believe can win. And I think that's why, I think Woody Johnson feels the same way I do, which is maybe scary. Maybe I should need to rethink how I think. But I think Woody Johnson told you as much at his end of the year quick media session, and then again, with an interview in the Post. But he said in his interview session that everybody expected us to be good. It wasn't just me. A lot of people said we were going to be good. A lot of people expected us in the Super Bowl. A lot of people talked. The NFL gave us 6 primetime games. I mean, we were expected to be good. Nobody saw this coming. I think he feels this roster is good enough to win. But I don't know if it's his, I guess the relationship with Aaron Rodgers is frayed so much that he's not open to it. And I don't know how Aaron Rodgers feels. But to me, if Aaron Rodgers wants to come back and play, and he's willing to do it for the New York Jets, I think he showed that he can play. I think that you're not going to bring in anybody else because you're also going to take a cap hit of $40+ million. So, you're going to be limited in some of the roster moves you can make. You're going to have to use it in either a pick or a free agency or trade for a veteran quarterback who you're going to have to pay him. You're going to have to, also pay $40 million towards Rodgers not to be there. It just seems like, how are you going to build the rest of the roster? You got Reed, who's going to be a free agent. You got to have to build the roster a little bit, maybe add to the offensive line, although you feel like Fashanu has shown you got a left tackle there. There are some things you got to figure out and still put together this roster and go win. And it makes it harder when you just got a dead money hit of $40 million for a quarterback who's probably still going to be better than any other quarterback you bring in. I want a guy like Pete Carroll comes in, and you're telling me Pete Carroll, after years of working with Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll and Aaron Rodgers can coexist easy. You get an offensive coordinator in there. You work up this offense. You get a defensive coordinator in there and try and play defense with this team. I still think you can. And you try and win in the short term, and then you can look to rebuild. Because I'd rather rebuild from the standpoint of, okay, we're not the worst franchise in the sport anymore. We're not the laughingstock of all professional sports. Someone of significance who wants to, you know, run a franchise, a young executive. I could take a shot on a young, hot executive who's got his choice of jobs, and he might not choose the Jets because they're a dysfunctional disaster. 888-808-1019. A little bit of Yankee talk coming up, and then, of course, we'll answer the question that I guess Evan Roberts in the afternoon show proposed about Rodgers to the Giants, which, look, we'll do it next, but there is a circumstance where at least I'd be open to it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Quick break, come back with your calls next. All right, 333. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. You know how much I dislike Tom Brady, right? I've talked about this a lot. I'm just fed up with him. I'm fed up with him being everywhere. I'm oversaturated with Tom Brady. It got to the point where it felt like the NFL like couldn't have a postseason without Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And, you know, the NFL couldn't. Oh, what's an AFC championship game if Tom Brady isn't playing in it? Like, oh, it's just, I got so sick of him. Even though the Giants, and I'm a guy who's been on the record, I typically only hate players and teams that beat me and cause me pain. That's why I don't hate the Mets. Anyway, so that's why people are surprised, as a Giant fan, that I have such ill will. And I wouldn't say ill will as a person. He's a fine enough guy, I suppose. I don't know. I'm tired of seeing his face. So people are surprised as a Giant fan that you're tired of Tom Brady. Well, I am. I'm just tired of everything. I'm from avocado ice cream and his stupid diet and TB12 to, you know, every single postseason. What would this win mean for him and Bill Belichick? Would they be the greatest ever? And then he goes to win the Super Bowl in Tampa. It's always solidifies the idea he's the greatest player ever. Blah blah blah. Every year, is he the greatest? Now he is the greatest. And just now he's gonna, you know, be a broadcaster. It's never ending. Now the dopey commercials and everything, and now maybe at least I won't have to listen to him be the broadcaster anymore, because I don't know if he's going to continue being a broadcaster, because he is obviously heavily involved in running the Vegas Raiders. Because if you haven't heard, there's a report out there that Tom Brady has now reached out to Bill Belichick to gauge his interest in possibly becoming the next Raiders head coach. And it's just, one, it's obnoxious. Like, and I'm not one for, like, it's sports. So the idea of conflict of interest, I mean, can he broadcast the other game? Like, okay, so he can't do a Raiders game. I guess, whatever. But if you're going to be an owner, you shouldn't be on the broadcast. I get it. So maybe he'll be done with broadcasting. But just the obnoxious nature of, like, you know, he bought into the Raiders. He's going to run the Raiders. He's going to do the big games. Now he's going to get Bill Belichick to write on a napkin that, you know, Bill Belichick resigns as, you know, HC of UNC, which would be just obnoxious. If it happens, it's obnoxious. And I will hate the Raiders as much as I hate any franchise this side of the Philadelphia Eagles. And just to think, if Bill Belichick, like, we talk about how desperate he was, right? Oh, he even reached out to the Jets, how desperate. And think about that now. For all the people who thought the Jets were foolish to take the call of Bill Belichick, or good for Woody Johnson. I actually talked to people who said that. Listen to people. Good for Woody Johnson not to take that call from Bill Belichick. Yeah, good for him. Now we're talking to Steve Spagnuolo. Now we're talking to anybody who's ever coached a football team in any manner whatsoever. But, you know, good for Woody Johnson not to talk to Bill Belichick for his coaching vacancy. What idiocy. And now, if he goes, how desperate would you be? This guy is out there. I guess it would eliminate the thought process that he is out there to, like, you know, prove that he could do it without Tom Brady. Because now he's taking a job at college. Right? He ruined the young quarterback he had in New England, and it failed there by giving, you know, two defensive-minded coaches, or at least the one in special team, giving him Matt Patricia. Now, I'm not saying Jones is any good, Mac Jones, but you give him Matt Patricia and Joe Judge as his offensive coaches? Are you crazy? Like, that's one of the crazier things Bill Belichick's ever done in his life. But can you imagine if he goes and works for Tom Brady? Now, I know Tom Brady wouldn't be on the field, but how do you go work for Tom Brady now and try and go win a championship as, you know, the head coach for the owner, Tom Brady? Like, it's just such a preposterous, ridiculous thing. But, of course, it's a story. It's out there. It's Tom Brady. I mean, you can't make it up. Even I was joking a little bit about Nikki Glaser. Like, now I think I read she signed a deal to do the next 3 Golden Globes. Even his roasts make people's careers. I am so sick of Tom Brady. Like, good for her. I think she actually is excellent at what she does, but it's just like she's been in a million roasts. No one gave a damn. Then she does the great Tom Brady's roast, and suddenly she's going to be the Golden Globe host for half a decade. This is what bothers me about the guy. He's King Midas. I mean, everything he freaking touches. Now, he hasn't been very good as a broadcaster, although who gives a damn? Like, is there ever anything more? Like, is there another thing in sports? It might be hard to find another thing in sports. And I know thing is probably the wrong word, but it's that much of a broad statement. Like, is there another anything in sports that is more overrated, more overdone, more talked about, and yet more meaningless than the broadcasters on the game? And I'm sorry, because I know technically I'm in broadcasting. And there are ones who are great at it and ones who are lesser at it, no doubt. And there are guys who have the, and it's mainly because they've been doing it for forever, but they have the sound of a big game, there's no doubt. Growing up, Summer All in Madden, you knew it was a big game. Jim Nantz has that feel. You know, he was doing the tournament for forever. He's doing the Masters for forever. He's doing the NFL forever. You know, Jim Nantz is on the call. Sounds like a big game. But, like, ultimately, has anyone ever turned on or turned off a game based on the broadcaster? Not in the NFL, at least. Even everyone complains about John Smoltz. Nobody ever says, I listened to it with the, like, you watch the broadcast. You complained about how he hated the Yankees, same thing as Buck for years, but it's all BS. But that's Tom. I mean, everything Tom Brady touches, is he turns to gold, man. And we'll see if the Raiders are really going to put him to the test. Because if he turns around the Raiders and this dysfunction franchise and that owner with that haircut, God bless him. Because then, then it's just, he's protected from by the prince up on high. I'm telling you. But I've had it with Tom Brady, and now he's going to, you know, imagine leaving after all this and his whatever big 400-page manifesto and going to college and taking on that just to leave before he ever coaches a game to be the Raiders head coach, to work for Tom Brady. I can't stand Tom Brady. I don't know why. Mainly because he's protected by the Prince of Darkness, man. It's just unbelievable. He doesn't age. He wins everything. And, you know, anything he's associated with, he does that stupid roast. The star of the roast is now, her career is like skyrocketing. Like everything. He could throw the damn, you know, Lombardi trophy to the bottom of the ocean and no one gives a damn. He's taking the Lombardi Trophy and throwing it from boat to boat. No one cares. To be fair, they do all kinds of crazy things with the Stanley Cup, but that's what I'm told. Wouldn't know as a Ranger fan. Ho, ho, ho. Certainly not this year. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Michael in West Hempstead. What's up, Mike?
Hey, brother.
What's going on?
How much money do you think Pete made for Cohen over there when he hit the home run in Milwaukee?
How much money did he make for Cohen? Yeah, he made a bunch of more playoff games, absolutely. Made him at least, right, two and you know, five playoff gates, if I'm doing my math correctly.
Right. So, how much?
I don't know exactly how much. I'm not. I guess I could find out how much they make per playoff game at the, in their building. But he made him. Yeah. If you want to point to that home run leading to the next two rounds, which clearly you can, then yeah, Pete Alonso on his own made the Mets a lot of money.
Yeah, that's an amazing point because one guy made the franchise more legitimate on you know besides the money, and maybe that's why Soto came over because they didn't you know they were in the playoffs.
I'm sorry. What was the last thing you said? Because now I'm looking to see how much money they make in the playoffs.
Okay. And, you know, the home run also gave the franchise legitimacy being in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that had some effect on Soto saying, hey, you know, they were in the playoffs too.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that, I mean, I suppose you could argue that them going deeper into the playoffs and playing in the National League Championship mm-hmm. Series, and you know, if you actually care about this, I think it's a silly argument, but I'm biased because I'm a Yankee fan. The idea that they did a better job against the Dodgers because they won an extra game, you could argue that those last few weeks made a difference with Juan Soto, although I doubt it very much. I think he was just going to go he was going to go for the money, and plus by that point. You know, even if they lose that series, they had one hell of a run, a lot of fun. They still had all the Grimace stuff. They had all the OMG stuff, and they did turn around a dead season at 11 games under 500 to get to where they were and had miraculous moments even up until that point. But, yeah, no doubt, Pete Alonso made a – we wouldn't be having that fun – like, it wouldn't have been the same feeling around the Mets if they would have lost that wild card series to Milwaukee. Losing the wild card series to Milwaukee – after winning game one, compared to beating the Phillies, having that grand slam from Lindor, and then taking the Dodgers to where they took them, the difference in where the Met fan would have felt about this team is enormous, no doubt. That was a huge home run. It's the biggest Met home run of the year, no, in my mind, without question. Alonso's home run, especially considering who he was, I mean, you know, who Pete is and the circumstances of how bad he was and how unclutch he was all year to have that moment in that and hit that home run off of that closer. Let's also, again, MLB the Shredder, you might think it's a stupid thing where they put together their list, you know, through analytical data and they run it through the Shredder machine and come up with the best player at each position. The best reliever in all of baseball was just put to be Devin Williams, the new Yankee closer and former closer of the Milwaukee Brewers who he hit that home run against. So you're talking about one of the, whatever you think of him, one of the hardest pitchers in baseball to hit. He hit a game-saving home run. And it spurned them all the way to the National League Championship Series, of course. Made the money. Made everyone, every Met fan feel completely different about the way the season ended. I mean, you know, it got Jerry Seinfeld telling me that he didn't even want Juan Soto and he was happy to drink Yankee tears. Like it was just it was a great all around Mets season. And it wouldn't have felt the same without that home run. Absolutely. And that's why I'm just saying. I'm not saying the Mets are doing anything wrong. Because if you want to be honest, I personally think you can make one hell of an argument that they're better off not signing him. Their offense was the seventh best. They scored runs. For a time there, they were as potent as anyone, and they had as many above-average major league hitters in their lineup as any team in baseball. They scored a ton of runs. They just added Juan Soto. They replaced Pete Alonso for Juan Soto. And I know Jesse Winker, Iglesias, there's still guys who are missing from this team. But ultimately, the core of the team lost Pete Alonso and added Juan Soto. And their offense was pretty damn good last year. And the owner has shown the ability to spend for the big free agent and two at first base, if you include the Japanese star, two big-time young free agents at the first base position, including Vladimir Guerrero Jr., are going to hit the market next year. And I don't think right now there's a mandate to win the World Series this year. I mean, I guess, you know, at this point, once you join the ranks, if you're going to take this town, if you're going to, shift the dynamic of big brother, little brother, then every year is win the World Series or bust. But you've got a young executive in Stearns. You got a young head coach. You got a young manager. You've got an owner who just bought the team not too long ago. He's got deep pockets for forever. You just signed your stud free agent signing, Juan Soto, for the next 15 years. I mean, it's not like you're desperate for offense. You just added Juan Soto. You go at it. To me, you add Tanner Scott at the back end of the bullpen. You go compete for a World Series this year. And then next year, the owner's going to be willing to spend $600 million on Vladimir Guerrero. And now you've got those two back-to-back. Think of that 3-4. Think of Lindor, Soto, Vladimir Guerrero, Vientos. Think of that top of the lineup. For the next, Lindor isn't getting any younger, I suppose, but Vientos? Think of that three, that powerhouse threat in the middle of that lineup. If Vientos is going to become what we think he's going to become and what he did last year, and then even in the postseason, he was amazing. Think of how great Vientos was this year, and he can only get better at how young he is, how young Soto is, and how young Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is. You're talking about 10 years of Soto, Guerrero, and Vientos. That's a hell of the middle of the lineup for the next 10 years. That is a powerful middle of the lineup for the next 3 years. Not so great defensively, although Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a pretty good first baseman. But like that makes a lot more sense than to me than even getting Pete Alonso. All I'm saying is I'm tired of hearing, hey, Pete, don't you know how much it benefits you? Hey, Pete, why don't you do this? Hey, Pete, just play ball. Hey, Pete, they offered you a contract. You didn't have a great year. You got to do what you got. Like, if the Mets want him, if the Mets are in, if this is the World Series year, if the Mets are going to be a family, if the Mets are going to do right by their guys, if the Mets are going to give the fans what they want and the guys they want, and, you know, there's value, too, to having Pete Alonso in the same uniform, breaking records, doing all these things, hitting 500 home runs in a Met uniform. There's value to that for this franchise. And before we start going crazy about how the hell could he want 6 years, how the hell could he want this, how the hell could he want that, they offered him 6 or 7. And after 1 year of 34 home runs, being an all-star, and hitting the biggest home run of the most fun season the Met fan has ever seen, you're going to tell him he's worth half the amount of years? I can see why he's not thrilled about it. 350, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break, we'll be right back. All right, 356, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. It's obviously just terrible watching what's going on in California right now. I mean, these wildfires are just devastating. And it's scary and heartbreaking watching these entire communities just... I mean, they're showing, like, my wife was showing me the clips of what, like, they were showing pictures of what the neighborhood normally looks like and what it is now. It's just, it's devastating. And it's just to have the perfect storm, for lack of a better term to call it perfect. But, like, this, the fires along with, these gusting winds, 100-mile-an-hour winds they're reporting, something like, it's crazy. And it's just... Just if you're listening to me on the app and you're out in California, like, take care of yourself, take care of your stuff. I mean, it's horrible. And now, obviously, there's going to be a game Monday night at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. The NFL's you know, released a statement that they're monitoring clearly. And if it needs to be, you know, the game needs to be moved, I guess they're going to prepare to play it at another location in case it needs to be moved. And clearly, you know, the community, you want to keep everybody safe. It's just, it's insane. I have a buddy, my buddy Brett lives out in California. You know, my friend Ronnie, his sister lives out in California. It's just, it's scary. They don't have, you know, reports are they don't have enough firemen. They don't have all the fire hydrants have run dry. It's just, the winds were too, you know, the winds are gusting too fast to have the water drop from planes. The planes were, you know, grounded yesterday because the winds are too high to fly helicopters. It was just a scenario, just perfect to have this disaster strike. It's just awful. It's tough to watch. Feel for everybody out there. Godspeed. God, you know, thinking about everybody out there. Take care of yourself. 888-808-1019. Let's take Terry and Amania real quick before we get to the update. What's up, Terry?
Good morning. First of all, belated happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been almost a month now, but thank you.
But I'm going to make a suggestion for future.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dear friend who was born on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
He didn't know until he was 10 that was his real birthday, because the family celebrated it on June 24th. So start celebrating your birthday on June 19th.
So they had a son born on Christmas Eve and felt like it was unfair to
not
him. So
fair
they
to him.
Yeah. So they lied to him for years. That's interesting. I agree, because it gets swallowed up. There's no doubt it gets swallowed up by Christmas.
It was only when he had to start filling out forms in school.
Mm-hmm.
That they explained to him that his real birthday is December 24th.
Yeah, that's... Thank you, Terry. I don't know if I would go that far, though. I don't want to, you know... I don't want to celebrate the wrong birthday, but there is something, like, it gets swallowed up. My birthday is December 19th. It gets completely ignored. I mean, not... Do we have cake? Do my kids sing happy birthday to me? Did I get a present from them? Like, do I celebrate a birthday? Sure. Did I have a big party on my 30th and my 40th? Yes. But, like, as far as just, I mean, within a day and all, like, as a kid, certainly, you know, my parents worked and, you know, we were okay, but we weren't of great means. And, you know, to have like a big birthday and then 6 days later get all the Christmas presents, it, you know, the birthday kind of was just like, oh, you know, little thing. And then I got Christmas presents. Like, it was, you're right. Having it on the, you know, in the summer is a much better scenario. You don't have to worry about that because, yes, my birthday has always been swallowed up by Christmas, which is no more of an obvious, like, thing was when, no more is that obvious with my original Christmas stocking, because... Although I'm sure the due date was sometime around Christmas. I never asked my mother what the due date was. But despite realizing I'm going to be born around Christmas, the thought never dawned on them to get me a Christmas stocking. Maybe I was supposed to be born after Christmas. But so I'm born on December 19th, and they sent my uncle out, I guess right around Christmas, to go buy a stocking for me so I'd have a stocking for Christmas. And he went to some store or whatever, and they had the only stocking they had was about 4 feet tall. It's this enormous big stocking that he had embroidered my name on it and everything. So, like, I had this hanging up every Christmas for a long time, this big stocking, and it was, like, never more obvious that, like, you know, oh, happy birthday. No, it's clearly, it's Christmas. That's what it was. Christmas was so big compared to my birthday that my stocking was enormous. It's not like that stocking got filled to the brim or anything. That would have been awesome. 888-808-1019. We'll come back, take your calls, get a little bit into the Giants quarterback situation, if it actually makes sense for Aaron Rodgers to be the quarterback. I'll tell you the one scenario it does. We get to the Yankees as well, and a possibility on why Roky Sasaki could be a New York Yankee. 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you on The Fan. Here's Marco.